Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th of July, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And just for a change of pace, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. A mysterious piece of malware that gives attackers surreptitious control over webcams, keyboards, and other sensitive resources has been infecting Macintoshes for at least 5 years. The infections, known to number nearly 400, not 400 machines, 400 different versions of the infections, and possibly much higher, remained undetected until recently and may have been active for almost a decade. Patrick Wardle, a researcher with security firm Cynic, or perhaps Cynic, said the malware is a variant of a malicious program that came to light in January after circulating for at least 2 years. Dubbed Fruit Fly by some, most malware samples capture screenshots, keystrokes, webcam images, and information about each infected Mac. Both generations of Fruit Fly also collect information about devices connected to the same network. After researchers from security firm Malwarebytes discovered the earlier Fruit Fly variant infecting four Macs, Apple updated macOS to automatically detect the malware. The variant found by Wardle, by contrast, has infected a much larger number of Macs while remaining undetected by both macOS and commercial antivirus products. After analyzing the new variant, Wardle was able to decrypt several backup domains that were hard-coded into the malware. To his surprise, the domains remained available. Within 2 days of registering one of the addresses, close to 400 infected Macs connected to the server, mostly from homes located in the United States. Although Wardle did nothing more than observe the IP address and usernames of Macs that connected to his server, he had the ability to use the malware to spy on the users who were unwittingly infected. Although the method of infection remains unknown, Wardle suspects it involves tricking users into clicking on malicious links as opposed to exploiting vulnerabilities in apps or in macOS. And actually, that's the number one method of infecting people, and it is very, very, very effective.
Yeah, hi, this is Bill from tech support. I need your password.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, I'm calling from Apple. Oh, thanks. A lot of Mac users are overconfident in the security of their Mac. The discovery just goes to reiterate to everyday users that there are perhaps people out there trying to hack your computers. It's possible. You never know. One of the interesting aspects of the latest Fruit Fly variant is that it flew under the radar for so long. The malware relies on the functions. I should not write these things late at night. The malware relies on functions that were retired long ago and uses a crude method to remain installed once a Mac is infected. Compared to newer, more sophisticated malware, Fruit Fly is much easier to detect, and yet, for whatever reason, no one caught it for almost 10 years. Two pieces of Mac software developed by Wardle would have given victims a strong indication they were infected. One was called BlockBlock. It would have warned of the suspicious launch agent used by the malware. A second tool called Oversight provides notification anytime an app attempts to access a Mac's webcam or microphone. A recent submission to the Virus Total Malware Detection Service shows that 19 of the top 56 AV and endpoint protection products now detect the malware. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is a bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Mac malware undetected for years? And your choices are, I was infected and I cleaned it up. I have an updated OS, so I'm good. I have no idea if I'm infected or not. And welcome to the club, Mac people. Which is the number one choice so far, by the way, 72% of you gloating. 16% say I have an updated OS, so I'm good. Yeah, you're actually kind of not, because there are variants out now that are not stopped by the operating system. Only two of you have said it. Were honest enough to say I have no idea if I'm infected or not. And one person said I was infected and I cleaned it up. So that's 25 of you so far. Please feel free to vote. And when you're done, I know you will have more to say. So if you scroll down on the right, you will find under Fascinating Stuff, the first link there is the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item on the poll discussion is 29 July 17, Mac malware undetected for years. And of course, I know you have more to say about this, so please feel free to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And this type of malware can access your camera, turn your camera on, and spy on you, literally spy on you. A lot of people have taken to putting little pieces of tape over their camera,
yep,
just in case. We used to wonder why the manufacturers didn't put a lens cover on the camera.
Cost an extra half a penny.
How many tech support calls would they get about my camera's not working? Have you opened the lens cover?
Oh, well, that's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, there's also people cover up their camera. That's great. But do they cover up their
microphone?
And does that work?
Right. Even covering the microphone doesn't work. It just gets more muffled.
Right. Right. And then they have the software that will fix that. Also, you can give us a call. 585. Did I say that already? I think you did. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
So I found a recursive article here. So I found an article on Ars Technica talking about this malware, and it pointed me to an article on Mac Rumors, which pointed me to the article on Ars Technica. So they go back and forth.
They're probably both owned by the same publisher.
Or they're both citing the one original source, which
right,
is what happens all the time. There's one original source, and then all the blogs report it.
Right.
In fact, that even happens for like bug reports. You know, I had a problem with this, and I posted it onto 50 different message boards, and suddenly the internet says a lot of people are having problems with this. No,
right,
it was one guy. He just posted everywhere.
Right. In this particular case, however, it does appear to be real.
Yep.
It is not fake news, and Mac people have been infected for up to 10 years. So all those smug Mac people who do not... I still hear it to this day. Well, a friend of mine told me I don't need any antivirus because I'm running a Mac. Well, pretty clearly you do, and oh well.
Yep. And what's surprising is the number of... maybe not surprising, is the number of non-technical publications that are talking about this. All the major news networks... Forbes has an article on it, so it's not just in the tech press.
Well, a lot of people who can afford them buy Macs, and a lot of those people are in media.
Yeah.
And so they're suddenly shocked to, yep, discover that their computers can get viruses, and so it's a huge story to them.
Yep.
For us, it's just like, yep, 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 and it's what happens.
Which brings to note, a little later on, got to wake them up, but we definitely have to do an Uncle Dave's story.
Excellent. We will do that. But right now,
yeah,
let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I had a question about wireless speakers. I've seen a lot of Bluetooth wireless speakers around, but I also see some Wi-Fi wireless speakers, and I've been trying to read up on them. As I understand it, these Wi-Fi speakers can stream audio without being connected to another device, like a cell phone or a computer, and they can stream it directly from the internet. Am I getting that right?
Not exactly.
Well, it depends on which speaker,
right,
you're talking about.
The general difference is Bluetooth speakers are short range, 10, 20 feet at most. Wi-Fi speakers will work anywhere on your Wi-Fi network up to several hundred feet. Many of the Wi-Fi speakers, particularly the Sonos brand, which is one of the more popular Wi-Fi speakers and ones we happen to sell in our store, they do connect to the internet directly themselves and will stream music from Pandora, Spotify, Apple Music, all the different streaming services, as well as from your computer or your phone. But they don't require a computer or a phone to start streaming the music. They do need a device to be set up. But they don't need to be streamed locally. So generally speaking, you get a Bluetooth speaker if you just need better speakers for your computer. You'd get a wireless speaker if you wanted to do home wireless and maybe put a speaker or two in different rooms.
And then you control it with what, your phone?
With your phone or your computer.
Yeah.
One of the neat things with the Sonos brand is that you can play the same music to each speaker, or you can play different music on each speaker. So you can have multiple speakers in your house. And, you know, say the parents are upstairs and they have a certain music playing, and the kids are downstairs, they have music playing. People out on the patio have different music playing. So that's kind of a neat option with that.
So it really depends on which brand you buy.
I see. So in order to get them to connect, though, you have to do that through a computer.
Initially, yes. Know. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, or I suppose an app.
An app on your phone, app on your computer.
Right. So it's the same thing as a Google Home or an Amazon Echo or any of those devices that doesn't have a screen but connects to the internet. You need some way to set it up, particularly if you have any sort of security on your network, which you bloody well should have. Once you've set it up, you don't need that anymore for that. You just need a way to start the stream.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep, have fun.
Bye-bye.
I just read an article on, I think it was Macworld. Let me see if I can find it. No, probably TechHive. They rated the best wireless speakers, and their best budget speaker was $100. That's not quite a budget speaker.
Right.
But then
depends on your budget, I suppose.
Then they had a money, no object speaker, and it was $6,000. The Bang, not Bang & Olufsen, what's the other one? Bowers & Wilkins, the Zeppelin, was $600.
Well, just the name alone, you can buy one.
Yeah, and it looks like a Zeppelin.
There you go.
And then there was a Super Whiz Bang one that you know was $6,000 for single wireless speaker. One of the things that many of the companies have tried doing is making one speaker that, in essence, sounds really, really good all by itself. So you'll have your woofers and tweeters in that one speaker box. You don't get much stereo reception out of it because it's all coming out of one box.
Right.
But many of them, including Apple's new HomePod, have multiple speakers in the same box, and they will analyze the room it's in and can give you sort of a faux stereo by bouncing off the walls. So you get kind of a left and right sound because it sends some music to the left wall and some music to the right wall.
Right.
But most of them also, if you do have multiple speakers, you can set up left and right stereo pairs.
Right. I'm looking at this Bowers and Wilkins thing here, and it doesn't look like a Zeppelin. There's no gondola.
It's underneath.
There's no motors. Oh, I see. That little thing right there.
That little thing underneath.
A little squished gondola underneath. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll go for that. But yeah, to get back to the original thing we were talking about in the story, Mac people need to be aware. They need to know that they are no different from anybody else. Every operating system, whether it's Windows or the Mac or Linux, I don't care what it is, the stuff running on Arduinos, the stuff running on Raspberry Pis, all of them are susceptible because all of them were written by human beings. And so you need to be aware and protect your machine. It really doesn't get any simpler than that. You need to protect your machine.
In the early days, the Windows users were a majority.
Right.
And the security built into Windows wasn't that good. So it made an easy target.
That's fair.
Yeah. It made an easy target. So it's like the burglar breaking into the house that doesn't have the burglar alarm. Now, the sort of analysis I've read is that Macs are about 20% of the market, and the majority of Windows users are using antivirus software, but about 20% of them aren't.
Right.
So now, or the antivirus software they have is out of date, and it came free with their computer 10 years ago, and they haven't updated it. So it's now the target market is about the same between Macs and Windows.
Right.
And
the smug factor, frankly, is much higher on Windows on Macintosh machines.
One thing to keep in mind is that not all antivirus programs can also do malware. So you have to have Mac and Windows, an antivirus program and an anti-malware program.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Vivian from Livonia on the line. Hi, Vivian. What's up?
Hi. I need your help. You've helped me before. I have an iMac, and after I had gone online to your Let's Dance, the Mac Arena, I installed the Clam X-Ray and the malware, Xantiware for my Mac. So I'm good with that. But I also have an iPad. This morning I went on my iPad. I went on Safari and was going to download something, and I got this notice that said, you are being infected with 4 viruses. What you need to do is tap the button and install the Google app. Well, let's see, what does it say? The Google Smart Lock. So I did that. And then when it said open, I did open it, and now the iPad does seem to be all right, but it's been very unnerving because how do I know that it really did that, and what can I do to protect the iPad for the future beyond that?
The message was fake, and you've installed fake software.
And I've been what?
You've installed fake software, and you it's spying on you. You have no idea what the fake software is doing to you. The message you got was fake. You should not have installed anything.
Yeah, when you get messages like that, Vivian, most of the time they're not real. But what you can do to fix this,
yes,
is go back to Let's Dance.
To where?
To the to the Security Tango.
Let's Dance. Okay.
Right. Under on that list, you selected the Macarena. Underneath that is the iPhone Pavane, if you prefer. And that works also for iPads.
iPhone.
Pavane. It's a type of dance. They're all dances.
Okay.
What happens is you can get some various issues there as well. There are two listed in there right now. One is the Intego virus barrier for iOS, and the other is Lookout for iOS. Intego costs $1. Lookout is free. Just pick one of the two and install it and run it. The hope is it will find whatever you installed and remove it.
Okay. All righty. So, that was in the back of my mind that, don't do this, but this is the first time I've ever had this happen. And it's amazing that, I tuned in and I said, oh, my God, they're talking about Max today.
Yep.
So this, I will do that. And then my iMac is not affected, right?
It theoretically shouldn't be, particularly if you've got protection on it.
Right.
So you should be okay there. And once you get Lookout or Intego on your iPad, it will be fine. If you have an iPhone, you should do the same for that.
I don't have that. I'm not that hep.
You sound pretty hep to me, Vivian.
All right,
you should be okay.
And can you tell me again what I'm going to look to download?
Yes. If you go to the Security Tango.
Yes.
Under Let's Dance, the bottom one is called the iPhone Pavane. P-A-V.
iPhone Pavane.
Right. The important word there is iPhone. So
right.
If you go to Let's Dance, the bottom choice in that drop-down list is the iPhone. So go to that one. And you'll see there some verbiage, which is blah, blah, blah. But yeah. Down at the bottom of that list is a link to two different programs. You only need one of them.
All right.
Do not install both. Just pick all one right. you like. Intego costs 99 cents, and Lookout
Intego?
Is free. You'll see it on the list. It's INTEGO is the company name. Virus Barrier iOS is the name of the product.
Okay.
Virus Barrier is 99 cents. Lookout for iOS is free. And they're both listed with the prices.
Either one would do.
Either one would do, yes. Just pick one of the two and install it and run it.
Yes.
And follow up what it says, and it should tell you whether or not you're infected and clean it up.
Right. And generally...
Okay, thank you so much. God bless all of you.
You too.
I love you.
Thank you, Vivian. We love you.
Yeah.
And I was so... I thought, oh, thank God this happened on Saturday. I know who I can call. All right, you have a very good day. Thanks.
You too, Vivian.
And generally, don't believe any of those messages that pop up on your computer.
Right.
Especially
right.
if they don't come from the program you bought yourself to install.
Right.
And a lot of times, if you stop and the problem is you don't stop and think. You panic because you have a virus.
People are click happy.
Yeah. So she's on an iPad and it tells her to install a Google product.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, in fact, she may not be infected at all because
right.
if it was, in fact, looking for a Windows machine, it may not have installed anything.
Right, and tap here to download. If it was a real application, it would have taken her to the App Store. It may have installed an ad-generating program.
Right.
That isn't technically malicious, just generates ads, but...
But Lookout will tell her that and give her the option to remove it.
The thing, though, that folks have to do, which I've been saying for a few months now, if you have to stop and think about clicking on something like that, don't.
Right, and they don't think because they're scared and panicked by that big virus warning.
Well, it's what we do now. Everybody who talks about anything, whether it's politics or viruses or anything at all, it's that Lyme disease public service announcement we just had on. There's a threat to America. Mm-hmm. It's ticks, and they're going to kill your children in their sleep. okay, they're serious things, but when every single thing you hear or see or read is a serious threat that's going to kill your children in your sleep, eventually you get numb. And when you get numb, you stop thinking. And when you stop thinking, you get infected.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the whole point of these ads is to scare you into doing that click.
Yep.
That one little click is all they need.
I'm going to lose everything. I'm infected. Yeah, no.
Well, and I've seen some of the messages say, don't close this window or you will lose everything.
Right.
So
I'm not sure how that happens, actually, but...
but I better not close the window because I don't want to lose everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, just lose that screen. That's all you're going to lose.
That's all you're going
to
lose.
Because until you allow them permission to get into your machine, they can't.
That's right. That's exactly right. But people don't know. They just don't know. And it's not their fault. They just don't know.
Here's the thing, folks. And you can be, for the most part, I think both on PC and Mac, until you allow them to take control of your machine. In other words, that they can log in. You've actually got to see them log in. You've got to give them permission. Because usually, most of these, back in the day, if I wanted to take over somebody's computer, it would pop up with a screen and say, allow this person to get in.
Right. They usually have to
log me in.
Yeah, they have to download a client first. Even.
Right. And it's not on your machine. So you can safely just, if you want, turn the machine off, shut it down, and then restart it. And 97% of the time, you're going to be okay.
Yep. But people panic. It says, don't do this.
Yeah. Oh.
And
we've been taught to obey signs since birth.
We've been taught to obey signs. Yeah. And we're in a very familiar, safe environment.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We're in our own home, on our own iPads. And when something like that pops up, we tend to believe it because we're safe. We're secure in our own homes. And so, you know, Vivian, if you're still listening, we're absolutely not blaming you. absolutely not blaming you. This is the sort of thing everybody does.
It happens every day. Right. I can't tell you, folks, out there, Vivian, like, by far, you are not, you know, at least you didn't get stung. I can tell you stories out there that people have gotten hit for over $350 plus.
Right.
And their machines weren't infected, and they're sitting there feeling so dumb. And, you know, well, they said, yeah, don't believe it.
Right.
Like I say, my rule of thumb, if you have to think about it for more than 5 seconds, don't click on it.
Assuming you do, in fact, yeah, think about it. But yeah, so both of the links, by the way, on the iPhone Pavan, both of them take you to iTunes.
I think the virus barrier link is broken. I don't think they offer that named product anymore.
Oh, really? Well, that's how often I actually use. Okay, not. So really, it does look like it's going to be Lookout.
But Lookout is there. But I think Intego does have an iOS version. I'm finding it now to send to you.
Yeah, send me the link, and I'll fix the link. It's something. Well, look at this.
One of the protections built into the iPhone and the iPad is that you can't install software except through the Mac Store, and the App Store vets programs first. So sometimes bad ones will sneak through, but a much lower chance of
right.
it. So when she hit that tap to install, it probably didn't do anything.
Probably.
No.
But she should still be running yes. Lookout or something like it anyway. The reality is that you cannot be 100% certain on any platform of being clean. The best you can do is protect yourself in any of the myriad ways. Dance a security tangle for whatever your device is, whether it's a Mac machine, a Windows machine, an iPhone, an Android, or a Linux machine. All five of those operating systems require some sort of protection. And if you're not using it, you're in trouble. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hiya, Scott. What's up?
All right. First thing is that I've been using Intego on my iMac for maybe 10 years. And so it's working well. And I like that. Unfortunately,
excellent.
It does not seem, as Steve discovered, to be available for the phone or the iPad. But I just wanted to say that was one thing. I love it, too. The second thing is the iTunes question I have. In my iTunes playlist, I have, for podcasts, I have 13 different listings. But every listing, when I click on any one of those 13 listings, always takes me to your station. And the other thing don't exist. I have no idea what's going on with that.
You mean it doesn't say it's our podcast, but when you click on it, it takes you to our podcast?
Like one is WBFO from here in Buffalo. And it's very other things. There's a podcast where I know someone interviewed me on the podcast, and all of them, when I click on them, they lead to your station. I have no idea what's happening with that.
Well, I don't see a problem here.
For many years, I just
yeah, no,
what's doing it? Pardon?
Yeah.
I don't see a problem here.
Yeah, what's? I think that's normal.
We need to put that on everybody's machine.
Yeah.
the power of that.
What it sounds like to me, well, Steve should be the one to speak to this, but what it sounds like to me is there's a corruption in your iTunes database or whatever
XML,
they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's an XML file. I almost hate to say it, but the easiest thing might be delete them all and then resubscribe to the ones you really want.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do that after today's show.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, you want to be able to click on that at least.
That's right. That's right.
Send us that file so we can put it on everybody's iPhone.
Yeah, really. Just put it out there as malware. Soundbites malware that you need to install on your...
All right. All right. Good luck, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you.
We got to get a PC version of that.
Yeah, exactly. There's our laugh for the morning. Here's the deal. What the what iTunes has, what many, many programs have, iTunes is just one of them, is you can have a list of your podcasts or your music or whatever, but that list is actually just a file in the computer. If that file has been in some way damaged, and we all know computers, there's a gazillion ways things can be damaged.
Really?
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it? Then all kinds of weird things can happen. In Scott's case, it always takes him to our podcast, which is, I think, excellent. But the only thing he can do is to, as Steve said, delete everything and start again, or there must be a way to actually zero out the database.
You could probably edit. Well, delete all of those podcasts from inside of iTunes.
Right.
It's easier than deleting the whole database because then you lose your movies and music and
everything else. Yeah, that makes sense. Right, because it's all one file, of course. Yeah. I hate that.
All the individual music and show files are separated files.
Right.
But the database is an XML file. So if you know XML, you can go in and edit it.
Excellent. Good to know. And I have done my best to forget all the XML I ever knew. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. The truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Well, the iPod.
Pa, pa, pa.
Only the shuffle and the nano.
Pa, pa, pa.
The iPod died so slowly. Well, that's except for the touch, that's all there is.
Yeah, so the touch is the only one left.
The iPod died slowly and then all at once. After nearly 16 years, which must be almost how long I have this one, on the market, more than 400 million units sold, and one Cupertino company launched into the stratosphere on its back, Apple quietly pulled the iPod Nano and Shuffle out of its virtual stores on Thursday. The iPod Touch still lives on. In fact, Apple now offers the Touch with 32 gigs of storage starting at $1.99.
No, reread that.
With the offers the Touch.
Yeah, no, the price.
What did I say?
$1.99. $199.
Don't quote me.
Opinions expressed or no way.
You cannot get them at Steve's store for that price.
Oh, sorry, there's been an update. Now they're $199. I'm so sorry. Oh. Okay, so you...
That two-second window is closed.
That two-second window is closed. That happens once in a while, you know.
Yeah.
But, of course, the iPod Touch isn't actually an iPod. It's an iPhone Lite. Today officially marks the... Today, well, this week, officially marks the end of Apple's era of standalone music players. Okay, so you're probably looking at your smartphone and wondering why you should care that a music player which offers one very old and outdated version of one feature on your phone no longer exists. Well, that's fair. It's been years since the iPod sold in massive numbers. Apple even stopped reporting its sales separately in earnings releases, relegating iPods to other products, along with dongles and headphones and those weird cases for your Apple Pencil. Back in 2014, right around the iPod Classic's discontinuation, Tim Cook said that all of us have known for some time that iPod is a declining business. There's just no room left in the market for an iPod. In a way, though, the death of the iPod feels like a critical moment for an entire generation. I still have my 20-gig iPod.
Yep.
And I thought it was 60-gig, but apparently it's 20-gig. It says on the back it's 20-gig, and I believe it. It's got a real hard drive in it, and it still works. The iPod hit the shelves right after Napster caught fire. Remember Napster?
Yep.
Now we're going back. Well, we're going back 20 years, right? 16 years anyway. Pair the thrill of piracy with Apple's gadget and an ample hard drive, and music was suddenly set free. Those iconic white headphones were instantly ubiquitous. Music lovers able to soundtrack the world however they wanted. It's a generalization, but the main use of the iPad was control of your own personal soundtrack. Sure, there were other portable music gadgets, but mini discs, I have a mini disc player, by the way, and Walkman were bigger, clunkier, and more complicated. You had to plan what you wanted to listen to ahead of time. With an iPod, you had all your music all the time. You could argue that the iPod killed the album, making playlist and shuffle mode the primary methods of listening. It definitely helped kill paid-for music, because who can afford to buy all 5,000 songs to fill an iPod? Eventually, the industry caught up, trading downloads for subscriptions and albums for Discover Weekly playlists. Music became so readily available that companies had to invent new ways to find it. Alexa or Google Home works much faster than a click wheel. That's the beautiful irony here. The music industry Apple helped create, dominated by streaming and algorithms and discovery, no longer has a place for the iPod. If you have some nostalgia, Apple will be selling the remaining iPads in Apple stores, and Steve certainly will have some available for you, at least for a while, but you better hurry. They will go fast. The minute something is no longer available, everybody wants one. You can also buy a gadget like Mighty to use with Spotify, or an Apple Watch, HomePod, which Apple's surely seizes the iPod spiritual successors, or for the whole rest of the world, there's the Alexa and there's Google Home, and a couple other companies are coming out with them. More likely, you'll just stick with your phone, which represents the present and future of how you listen to music. But as it goes away, take a minute and remember the iPod. It set music free. Do you still use an iPod? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And for those of you watching on the YouTube, I still have my 20 gig, which I thought was 60 gig until I looked at the back. 20 gig, what is this, Gen 2?
I think it's a Gen 2, yeah.
Yeah.
Gen 1 had a physical wheel.
Right, this is a touch wheel.
It had a touch wheel, yeah.
By the way, you can't actually see this. Oh, well, I have to
turn it on. Yeah. So the first slogan
still
was
works.
A thousand songs in your pocket, which sounds really cool until you try to scroll from ABBA to ZZ Top.
Right.
Oops.
Well, and that's just it. I've got playlists of all kinds of things. I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs in this thing. But I, it's been sitting on a shelf. I had to plug it in and charge it last night because I really don't listen to it anymore.
Initial price was $4.99 for that model.
Yes, it certainly was.
Yep.
It certainly was. Now I could use it as a 20 gig drive.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's really...
Yeah, 20 gig hard drive.
Really. And why would I do that when I have 64 gig thumb drives that are a thousandth the size?
But that was such a breakthrough
that was cutting technology. Yeah.
You didn't have to carry the giant boombox and a briefcase full of cassette tapes.
I remember getting lots and lots of calls from DJs who were wondering how they traded in the boxes of albums or CDs that they used to carry around, and how they could do that on an iPad, an iPod instead. And of course, finding the devices that let you plug two iPods into the dock and switch back and forth the music as if they were two turntables and all that other stuff.
A lot of that stuff exists. Rob Linton is a DJ on the side.
That's right.
Well, he's a physical DJ in addition to being a radio DJ.
Right. Right. And so those are just, you know, this thing took the music industry by storm. It was an amazing, we forget now because we've just had it for 16 years. This is 16 years old.
That's a lifetime. We talk about, you know, dog years, you know, 1 to 7. Computer years are about 1 to 20.
Yeah. Yeah, this is 16 years old. The battery still works. The hard drive still works. The music is still on it.
Mm-hmm.
Much of it, of course, is just cavemen beating on logs because
that's all the music there was back then.
Right. But I have it, and I can even clip it to my belt.
That's the Apple belt clip.
Yep.
When they first introduced the iPod in 2001 at the press event, they gave everyone an iPod full of music.
Yep.
And they gave them a whole stack of CDs to be legal about giving them the music.
Right.
Because there was the whole rip, mix, burn promotion where you rip your own CDs, which meant copying a CD into your computer. It did not mean rip off the music company. But
right.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And, of course, Apple had that whole brouhaha with Apple Music.
Apple Music, yeah.
The Beatles album, label, and how Apple promised they would never get into the music business. so that Apple Music would let them use the name.
Yep. And then later on, when
apparently they were wrong.
Well, when Apple Music sued them again years later, Apple Computer said, and bought them.
Yep. Yes, that's exactly what happened. The moral many people learned from that story was don't trust Apple, but that's a separate story altogether. But the reality is that many people spent much of their lives with iPods. One of the first, in fact, the first tech device I ever bought my daughter was an iPod yep. Nano.
In fact, we still, well, you
which still may well know. Be sitting around somewhere. Yeah. Who the hell can find it anymore?
We often sell the shuffles to runners because they're very small and light. Yeah, you right. could run with your phone on your arm, which I see a lot of people doing, but that's annoying. And then the Nano had a screen, is a little bit bigger, and so that often went to kids.
Right.
But now we're seeing more and more people just hand down their old phone. Because right. parents didn't want to get the phone, their kids a phone for the data charges, but you hand down their own phone, and now it's a music player, game player, and quite often the plans are so nice these days. That's the word I want.
They're inclusive, anyway.
Inclusive, yeah. You know, you have six phones on your plan.
Right.
That it doesn't hurt anymore. You know, it used to be, you know, it'd right. be $200 per phone. To get a phone on your contract, so and dad so many, had one and nobody else did.
Right, and so many of them have unlimited data now, which right. means fast data for the first gig and then real slow data. But with music, you don't need fast data.
Yeah, it's very slow.
So that, you know, that was pretty cool, and people now can just wander around listening to whatever music they want. And so much of it is free nowadays. You know, you buy a subscription to Spotify or you put up with the ads on Pandora or whatever, and you can listen to all the music you want. Google Play. I have thousands of songs up on Google Play, and I can listen all day long. And if I don't have it, they might be able to find it.
Yep. I saw a chart there, talking about on a podcast, and I'm never going to find it again. But it was a chart over the talking about this, you know, the iPods being discontinued, a chart over the last 20 years of cell phone usage for the minutes used versus the data used.
Right.
And so the minutes used is a, you know, near, you know, 45 degree down.
Right.
And data used is like a 90 degree up.
Yep. Yep.
So we hardly ever use our phones for phones anymore. We always use it for data.
I had unlimited on Verizon. And then, of course, Verizon in their infinite wisdom took it away from me. And I felt lost.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like suddenly couldn't do things I wanted to do on my phone. It was a weird sort of feeling. Particularly if, as with me, I was driving all over the country at that point and I needed my data for, navigation. Now you can download, pre-download your route.
Yep.
So you go to Google Maps and plan out your route and then say, send it to my phone. And you can download the whole route to your phone and just use your GPS. So that's very nice, actually.
Unless you go too far off route.
Unless you go too far off route. That's exactly right. And then you need to use your data again. And of course, you know, when you don't have unlimited data, you're constantly getting notices from Verizon.
You're 80% full. You're 90% full. You're full
right.
in 5 minutes.
We're going to automatically give you another yeah. 5 gig for $600 or $800. I forget which the number is for another gig. It gets, you know, well, and they want you to buy the unlimited data. I suppose it's easier for them, too. Most people don't use that much. But if you find yourself consistently saying, you know, okay, give me that extra gig, it's cheaper to go unlimited. But it's nowadays, for example, my wife at the public market, if you buy a pound of coffee from her, you can pay with your credit card now because of Stripe and yeah. PayPal and whatever the other ones all are.
Many small business and independent people can now accept credit cards without paying an exorbitant fee.
Exactly right.
Or having a telephone line handy to, or carrying a kerchunker with you.
Right. And we all know what the kerchunker
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you're old enough to remember the kerchunker?
Yeah, right. If I'm old enough to be carrying this, I'm old enough to remember the kerchunker. But the fact is that we all use more data now. How many times are you sitting with a group of people and somebody says, and we don't remember things anymore. Right. We look them up.
Don't have to remember it. You can look it up easy.
Exactly. You know, keep your mind free for important things. And
I learned that from Albert Einstein.
What?
I learned that from Albert Einstein.
There you go.
He never bothered remembering his phone number because you can look it up in the phone book.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Stuff you can look up, don't bother remembering.
That's right. And now that's dang near everything. Actually.
In fact, I remember reading a very interesting essay by Isaac Asimov about how many things we don't have to remember anymore because either it's easier to look up or we don't use it anymore. And he said when he was a kid, he had to remember log tables.
Right.
Dozens and dozens of log tables.
Yep.
And now you just push the log button on your calculator.
I used to know every phone number of every friend on my street and my school that had to be 50, 60 phone numbers. I can barely remember my own.
Yep. Well, and that's
if somebody
now,
says, I need your phone number, I go, no, that's my wife's. Yep. No, that's my daughter's.
I got to pull up my phone and look it up.
Exactly.
There, and now there's a new scam that's been named now, neighbor spoofing, where you get the unsolicited calls, you know, spam phone calls that come not only from your area code, but from your own exchange.
Nice.
And so you think it's a neighbor.
I actually got a call from 555-555-5555. I almost answered it.
Just to see who it was.
Just to see how they manage that one. And then I realized how easy it was to spoof, so I didn't bother to answer. All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but fret not, oh listener you. We will allow you to do it again for a whole nother hour. We're going to take a slightly longer break while our beloved underwriters get to say their piece. And then we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. You are listening to Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and we will be back with a whole nother hour of this nonsense very, very shortly. So don't go anywhere that you can't get back from quickly. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, look, we're back.
Oh,
welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe.
You want it?
It's Soundbite. All right, everybody. Here it comes.
Wait a minute. I got to find it.
Oh, all right. There it is. All right, kiddies. Get your footy jammies on. Grab your hot cocoa mugs. Sit around in a semicircle, cross-legged on the floor, around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's story time with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yeah.
All right.
It's been a while.
It has been. You have a beard now. Long white beard. But you're a little dusty. Go ahead.
Okay. This one I found very entertaining, and like I say, to, you know, get me to come back on and do this, which I haven't done in a long time. And Steve and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
You know, you pay for what you get.
And you get what you pay for.
You got it. Well, I had an individual call me, and the machine was infected and wanted to get to cleanup. So I called back, you know, a few hours later. I go, well, I already had it checked out, and they charged me this. I said, oh, okay. She goes, well, why? What would you have charged me? And I said, this. Oh. And I go, oh? She goes, well, they charged me a lot less. And I go, okay. that, you know, that's okay.
Whatever, right?
Yeah, it's fine. Know, I says,
that's what makes a free market.
So for that price, did what software did they put on there to help keep you protected? None. She goes, they said I didn't need anything.
Uh-huh.
You don't, I go, oh, really?
Yeah, you don't need anything.
Well, right.
Then you'll come back to them and pay them again.
I said, seriously? I says, so the minute you get back on the net, you're going to get infected again. Oh? I go, yeah, you got to be running some stuff to protect you.
Yeah.
Well, they said I didn't need it. I said, okay, well, you know, when your machine gets...
Well, you paid for that opinion, so congratulations.
So when you get infected again, she goes, well, how much do you charge me to put it out? I says, well, tell you what, wait until you need it again. I says, you just spent the money.
Because that'll be another half an hour.
I says, you know, and bring it on in, and I'll do it. But I charge because I sit there and I go through a whole machine.
Yep.
I just don't do a quick scan, say, yep, here you go, and yeah, say, you know, $40 and you're out the door. I'm sorry, I take a look.
And this is what people don't understand. If there are two ways to check a machine. Mm-hmm. One is really the way we all do it, which is just run the software and believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're really checking a machine, there's hidden directories you look for, hidden files you look for.
Exactly.
All
Thank
kinds
you.
Of stuff.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. And again, folks, you're not paying for my time. Basically,
right.
As we've said, you're paying for the years of experience that I've
knowledge.
Had. And I know enough, not just to run the scans, but like Nick said, look in other areas for stuff that might creep back up.
Right.
And to also check and make sure you have the latest and greatest drivers.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure, you know, especially on some of these Windows 7 machines and Windows 8 machines, get the stuff updated. At least get you protected somewhat. But to sit there and believe a company when they say, oh, you don't need anything. Nowadays, when you hear us constantly talk about, oh, people's machines being hacked and they're being told, oh, yeah, you've got to pay us $270 or we're erasing your machine. And all these threats... You shouldn't be protecting with at least something?
Right.
I don't know what rock they live under.
And we're seeing a lot of unscrupulous computer vendors that will do advertising, you know, TV advertising, you know, free PC checkup. And, okay, yeah, I'll give you a free checkup right now. Yeah. You're infected, pay me $100.
Here's the one
which
I don't
probably
understand.
What it is.
There's a commercial, and I won't mention the name of the company, but there's a commercial out there whose spokes individual is an unshaven, scruffy-looking guy with a very thick Russian accent. Seriously? I'm going to buy virus software protection from him?
Mm-hmm.
I think not.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
I was born at night, just not last night.
Right, exactly. So... Although
Eugene Kaspersky is a really nice guy and sells pretty good software.
Well, this wasn't Kaspersky.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was not Kaspersky. Yeah.
I mean, but I'm sorry, folks, but anybody that tells you where if you go to take it to a repair shop and they say, no, you're fine. You do have them do that quick cleanup and they don't tell you what other software you've had they put on your machine to help keep you protected, I'd be very leery. I'm sorry. You know... It's a dangerous world out there right now. The internet is fantastic for finding information, but just on the other side of that coin, there's a lot of other people that are trying to get in there and steal your information. It's been this way since the day we first started broadcasting.
Yep. It makes it easy for the good guys to do stuff. It makes it really easy for the bad guys to do
stuff. It's been 27 years in the making, folks, but you know, it's still out there, and it's a game of leapfrog.
Right.
So no matter if they cleaned up your machine today, I can almost guarantee you by tomorrow you've got some other spyware or malware in there. By the time you got it back home, hooked up, and been on it for about, oh, say 5 minutes.
Yep.
I'll give it up to 5 minutes. Probably less, but at least 5 minutes.
Yep. That's generous, but okay.
Yeah, I try to be. You know,
nice. They're a nice guy.
But at least worth their money that they spent.
Right. And it is a problem everybody has. We just saw today's headline news. Macs are as susceptible as everything else to problems like that. And, you know, I call them viruses still. Most of them are malware of one sort or another. But it's the label is much less important than the fact that you need to protect yourself. So you need to be protected, and part of that protection is your own brain.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody says you're infected, get skeptical, particularly if you are indeed running antivirus, anti-malware, anti-everything software.
Mm-hmm.
Check your machine yourself first.
Yeah.
If you do find a problem, clean it. If you don't find a problem, who are you going to believe? Some stranger on the phone or the software you've been...
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's...
Ever. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so if you get a message on your computer that you got a virus and it didn't come from the virus program you bought, don't believe it.
Yeah.
Right. And we see it all the time. Pop-ups are prevalent on the internet. Many browsers can suppress pop-ups, mm-hmm. but you have to set them up to do that. You have
exactly.
to go into
it doesn't
your,
happen automatically.
Right.
And most of these now can bypass the pop-up blockers.
Many of them can.
Because mm-hmm. they don't technically qualify as a pop-up, so the browser lets them through.
Right.
It's cat and mouse games. We try to stop the bad guys, and they stop the good guys.
Like
so,
we say,
so how many times have you gone to your banking website, and it says, can't open the window because you've got your pop-ups blocked? Well,
right.
Okay, that was a good pop-up. I want the good ones. I don't want the bad ones. How do you tell the difference?
Game of leapfrog.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you can't forget, because they will always find another way around it.
Yes, they will.
Rest assured, folks. As sure as the sun comes up in the morning, they will find other ways to get around stuff. And that's the way it's been since as long as I can remember.
I always feel the dichotomy of having ads on some of my websites. Ask Nick has ads. Soundbites has ads. We're always telling people how to block ads.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But I do know that if I'm not, and I can't be the one who's careful. If Google, for example, gets hit by somebody who puts a bad ad in, Google will find it pretty quickly and send it away. But the possibility exists that I will, in fact, that ad will show up on my website.
Mm-hmm. And with millions of ad impressions every hour and billions of people using the internet, the ads are pretty high.
Yeah,
they're pretty high. Yeah, I love the Google ads because I every time somebody clicks on an ad, I make a penny or two. And that's great for me, but I'm certainly not going to retire on that money.
Probably won't even go to Burger King.
Yeah, that's right. But the point is that, it's this tiny, tiny little trickle of pennies. And so I don't want to give it up, but
yeah,
it's hard to justify it in my own mind when I know that these things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So far, apparently I'm more greedy than I am, socially aware. Apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, most of us are just too honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently not me.
You're more honest than you are greedy.
Right. Right. So it's a problem everywhere. I run Microblock Origin, or uBlock Origin, as it seems to look like on here.
Mew.
Mew who?
Mew. MewBlock Origin, and it's a... It's an ad blocker and a pop-up blocker and a blocker and a yada, yada, yada. You can whitelist things and blacklist things. It's a pretty nice program. It is so far aggressively effective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem all the way around. Having ads are how people... And I don't want to see ads go away because people are then going to start charging...
Yeah.
To go to their websites.
It's one way or the other.
One way or the other. Nobody does this stuff for free. Like I've always said, we've got a donate button on the Soundbites website because it costs me money to maintain that website. So I love it when somebody throws a couple of bucks in there. But, I don't want to, I'm sure never going to charge people to come to the Soundbites website. But if we can't afford to do it, then we're not going to do it. That's how that works. And so the way around that is through ads and a little bit of ad revenue. And so if that goes away, lots and lots of sites on the internet are going to have to figure out how to make money some other way. We see that with Wikipedia. They have a begging banner every once in a while. Snopes right now is doing a GoFundMe. Well, that's because of a nasty divorce, but still.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's too bad. And there it is. Yeah, we need your help. It's the big banner in the front. And so there's a whole lot of There's a whole lot of people who are making a penny here, a penny there from ad revenue, and then suddenly to find that they can't anymore, they've got to make a change or give it up. I see that on a lot of the YouTube channels that I follow. Google changed the rules for ad revenue, and a lot of people immediately either went to Twitch or somewhere else, or they just opened up a GoFundMe or some sort of place where you can throw them a buck or two every month. And you know, if a thousand people all throw you a buck a month, you can do a lot with your website. And most of them are very, very, very good about that. They actually use money to make their websites better, which is their YouTube channels better.
And especially Snopes, because these days Snopes is so important.
Snopes is desperately needed, particularly now.
Yeah, that advancement for Islamic agenda sign going around.
Yeah.
Completely false.
Completely false. But the point is, there is no middle ground in this particular case, at least none that anybody's found. It's either ad-supported, or you're going to have to charge, or places are going to go out of business. You know, some things we do as a hobby, and some things we do because we think it's right, but all of them need to be funded somewhere or other. And so it becomes a matter of how do you get those funds.
Yeah, it's just the way life goes.
It's the way this radio station runs.
Yeah, twice a year we've had to come to you folks and ask you for to help us out to keep this show on the air. And like, you know, anything
else.
And
so far, a number of you have stepped up, and we're very honored.
Oh, we got a great fan base out there that, you know, support this program and all the other programs that, you know, this great station has to offer.
Yep.
We can't thank our listeners enough.
Yeah, but just like with everything else, there's only a few choices. You actually get money coming in, or you stop doing what you're doing. And that's what we see all over the internet. You know, we're all annoyed when we go to the New York Times or the Rochester DNC and it says you only have 5 free articles left or 3 free articles left or whatever the number is. But you know what? They have to make money too. It's just the way that is. There's nothing we can do about that. Somebody's got to pay for something somewhere, and that's the way that works. All right, listen, we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. It's 19 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon. Not too long ago, I had a problem with my laptop. I had, I think it was a Trojan. I finally did get rid of it. It took quite a while. And things were running fine for a while. Now, I'm getting a point where in my browser, which normally I'm using Chrome now, although I sometimes use Firefox. And initially, it runs fine, like when I reboot the machine. But after a couple of hours, it'll begin to really slow down to the point where it just freezes.
What OS?
Windows 10.
And how old is the laptop?
It's probably from 2011.
How much RAM do you have?
8 gigs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's still an old machine.
I still think it should run.
It's running.
Yeah. I mean, run well is what I mean.
So what do you have loaded up in the background?
When you say the background, I'm running Malwarebytes, I'm running Avast, and I run Super Anti-Spyware regularly. When I had the Trojan, Malwarebytes was flagging it. But now, it doesn't flag anything. When it slows down, there's no indication in those programs that there's a virus or a malware of any kind.
Right. And, well, okay, so there's a couple of things. One is 8 gigs should let you run quite a number of programs without a lot of slowdown. But if you have multiple programs open, like I know people who have a word processor and a spreadsheet and a...
No, I'm not doing that. Right. Just right now, only the browser is open.
And how many tabs do you have open in the browser?
Well, occasionally I'll have eight tabs open in some cases.
Yeah, well, see, each one of those will take up to a gig of particularly in Chrome, which Apple knows and they're working on it, but right now Chrome eats memory. So if you've got 8 tabs open, you're kind of filling your memory. One way you can tell you're doing that is if you can see the light on the hard drive.
We're just talking about that with my son. Computers don't have hard drive lights anymore. And he said, they used to have lights?
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, my computer does have... It does have a light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see it blinking regularly, it's swapping stuff out to the drive.
The other thing you can do is open Activity or Task Monitor. Especially when it slows down, and take a look at the processor load and the memory load.
Yeah, I've done that, actually. It looks okay, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. All right, well, it is in some way, excuse me, I beg your pardon, it is in some way going to be a problem with memory, I think, is what it's got to come down to. And every once in a while, it's not a bad idea. If you close your browser, wait about a minute and open it up again, does it speed up again?
Yeah, it does actually.
Yeah.
It does.
If it does that, then the problem is definitely RAM. And it depends on what you've got open, and it depends on what you've got, what sites you're going to. I mean, there's a million variables here.
And every website tends to open lots of different crap, right. The ads that come in.
Right. If you, for example, on my Chromebook here, which is a 2 gig Chromebook, I'm running a word processor. I'm running actually 2 word processors. A couple of sites are open, but that's also, it isn't big. But at home, I usually have my email open, at least a couple of pages doing word processing, at least one spreadsheet open where I'm keeping track of some things that I'm working on. And then, you know, I may go to Google and do some stuff. So I've got a bunch of things open, and I can see myself, I've got a 16 gig machine at home, so it doesn't slow down, but I can see myself using 8, 9, 10 gigs of RAM.
There's a Chrome task manager where you can see what specific things inside Chrome are using too much memory. Okay. It says Shift-Escape on Windows. Let's see if it works on Chrome. Yeah, works the same on
there
Chrome.
There it is, Shift-Escape, and I can see that my browser is currently using 192 megs is all it's using, because I only have a few things open. But, for example, the Soundbites tab is using 126 megs of that. Oh, no. The browser itself is using 193 megs. But the Soundbites tab is using 126 megs. The Callers page using 190 megs. I've got an extension for weather. Extensions take up an amazing amount of stuff. That's using 200 megs just by itself. So you find that there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on in the background when you're running anything. And the more extensions you have, and the more et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
There's a feature in Chrome called tab discarding. So when Chrome runs low on memory, it will automatically close old tabs you haven't opened in a while.
Yep. That's horribly annoying, by the way, because the minute it closes one, that's when I want that tab.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's a few things to look into. I'll go and look at those, okay?
Right. Yep.
Thanks for the tips.
Good luck.
Oh, now I'll post this article I found. And this is a very long-standing problem. I Googled Chrome memory leak or memory usage, and it goes back years and years on how much memory Chrome has taken. And part of it is because the computers come with so much more memory now. You know, 8 gig minimum, 16 gigs is common.
Right.
But if you have an older machine... That came with 4 or, God help you, 2 technically, Windows 10 runs in 2 gigs. Not very well and not much of anything else, but...
Right, right. And that's one of the problems we see. The other problem is if your memory fills up and you start swapping to disk, disk is the slowest thing on your computer. And if you start swapping out to disk, your system will slow dramatically. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Tech gurus, how are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. I wanted to bring something up. I noticed that Opera really, really works nice with a lot of tabs open.
Yeah, it's particularly the new Opera.
Yeah.
They've done a lot.
Because they know they're the underdog. They have to differentiate themselves.
Right. They've done a couple of really interesting things. One is they've got their own VPN, if you trust their VPN server. They've done really nice job in lowering the memory requirements.
And a built-in ad blocker, too.
And they've got a built-in ad blocker. So, yeah, Opera is a really, really nice product. I'm very impressed by it. I like it a lot. It works excellently.
I've experimented with, with Firefox and with Chrome and with some other browsers, and I've opened up, say, 20, 25 tabs individually now. I'm not using all browsers at the same time, obviously, and I notice I can hear my processor fan rev up, and every one of those browsers... other than Opera.
Yep. Yep. They're all one of the, well, this is the problem we've had for ever since there've been computers. The people who write these things have pretty high-end machines. So they don't notice that if you had a merely 4 gig machine that you're going to start running into memory problems. You know, they've all got 16 gig multiprocessor, big high-end boxes.
Because they want to compile fast.
Because they want to compile fast, and they want to do multiple things at once. And so they've got all of that, and so they don't pay a lot of attention to the fact that they're already using 15 of their 16 gig. Because it's still not slowing down, right? I mean,
exactly.
At home this morning, I accidentally... right-clicked on a folder in my bookmark on Chrome. It opened 29 tabs in addition to the 4 I already have open. And it used about 12 gig of my RAM. Well, I have 16, so it was not a big deal. Nothing slowed down, but I could just imagine... accidentally clicking on that on a 4 gig machine, I would be closing Windows till Tuesday.
Yep.
Right. And my machine, I would consider middle of the road. You know, I'm running a i5 processor, 3 gigs.
Right.
Or 4 core, 8 gigs of RAM, Windows 10.
Yep.
And, you know, like I said, I had like 25 or so open. And that was the only processor that didn't get my machine to start revving up.
Yep, yep.
That's the only one, and I'm really beginning to like it a lot. It is a really neat browser.
Opera is an excellent browser. I cannot say anything against it. It's very nice. Now, I will warn you, if you are using the new version and you use their VPN, the question is, who do you trust?
Right.
Because if your data are going through their VPN, they can read it. Right? So you because it has to be untranslated somewhere in order to get out into the rest of the internet.
Right.
So you may be spoofed is the word. You may be hidden from the other end as to who you actually are, but Opera themselves can see you. Do they care? Do we trust them? Et cetera, et cetera. Only you can answer that for yourself.
Exactly.
I will say I have used the VPN mode, and it's fast.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
I've experimented with that, too, and it's a lot better than a lot of the other free VPNs that are out there that you can notice a marked slowdown.
Yep.
So But anyways, people should rediscover Opera.
I completely agree.
It's a great browser, even if you don't use the VPN.
Yep, I completely agree.
Yep.
Excellent. Nice. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
So I just downloaded Opera and installed it. And even though I've got so many other things running, including the video stream and the audio recording, Opera is really fast.
Opera is really fast. Yeah. Opera, I think, is not available for the Chromebook. I'm shocked. Shocked, I say. But it is...
Give it time.
I will say that I have been using Opera off and on for years. There was a time when Opera was junk. I mean, it was utter and absolute crap. But now, with this new version, it's kind of amazing. And if you have not used it, you should give it a try. Obviously, it's not going to work on a Chromebook, but it works on Windows. It works on Macs.
Works on Linux. There's an Android version.
Yep.
So that may work on your Chromebook if you get an updated Chromebook.
If I update my Chromebook, which I have not done yet. Yeah. Dave, you have that new Chromebook. Are you getting Android apps yet?
No.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that.
Well, I think, like you said, they're still trying to... Let me preface it with this. I haven't checked lately.
Right.
I should probably do it again. Matter of fact, if I get a chance, I will try this weekend and do it again. But like you said, though, they were still having issues with the various versions because not all manufacturers in the Chromebooks write to the same specs. And getting the programs to work correctly on a Chromebook because of the way they are, you know, I think that is still was an issue for them. And I hadn't heard anything.
You must be on Chrome 53 or higher, and it only works on certain models, but it looks like it is available now. What, do you remember what model you have offhand?
Yeah, it's the Acer 1530, I think it is.
No, that's not on the list.
Mine was on the list.
Not anymore?
No. I'm guessing at the model number. You know, it's been a while since I did it. And I just haven't checked it. But yeah, because when Nick and I were talking about it, I quick looked mine up and I said, yes, it will run the Android app. I go, yes, finally, I bought something.
Right.
That, you know, like we've said before, you go down the street, you got the latest and greatest computer, you think, and then you go buy this billboard that says, oh, now this one is faster.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Is that the computer you have out there? Is your wife has out there?
No, that's another one that I have for her. The one I have is the white one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I brought in a couple.
I was going to say we could look when we left. But it's...
I'll bring it in next week.
Of the two Toshiba models, only available on the list, it's still planned. And
well, not only that, this is much older than than that. There's no question to that. It is an Intel, all of that stuff, but it's not... it's old. It's old. All my machines are old. I'm waiting for next year. Of course, I just bought that 3D printer. I just pledged that 3D printer. Yeah. I won't see that 3D printer until December, but
it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. I backed Kodama has a printer called the Obsidian on
if you or
Kickstarter.
Someone you know lives with epilepsy, be aware of it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Are you planning a vacation?
Yes.
Take the great savings you receive.
Yes, we're taking a break. Know that. Don't play that music.
No, I hit the wrong button. Operator issue.
All right, we're going to flog Dave. It'll take us a couple of minutes. So we'll take a break back in just a few minutes with what's left of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I think I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. We'd like to apologize for the little nap Dave immediately took right in the middle of his
brain fart.
He You know, the problem is we've been doing this for so many years, it kind of gets to be automatic.
Yeah.
So if for some reason it stops being automatic for half a second, you're done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You're absolutely done.
You know, and just trying to coordinate everything. You know, you get into a flow of things, but yet if your mind is thinking on something else, it's like, all right, no, wait a minute, I got to shift back. I got to shift back.
Yep. Okay, this is my hands down all-time favorite news story of the year. Possibly of all time.
I wouldn't know. I didn't get the mail.
I don't know what happened. Did you get the news?
I didn't look.
Okay. Back in 2012, Adobe recognized that Flash's end was near with a 5 to 10 year time frame for its eventual phasing out. This week, the company got specific. Flash will be supported through the end of 2020, after which, and it thrills me to say this,
it's dead.
The Flash player will cease to be developed and distributed. It is dead. It is an X app.
But we got to wait 3 more years.
It has joined the apps eternal.
2.5.
It is pining for the fjords.
And singing to the choir invisible.
Exactly. In the early days of the web, Flash served an essential role. Speaking of which, did you see that for an anniversary of Monty Python, somebody put up a giant parrot in I don't know, somewhere in London, and people gather now every day and do the parrot sketch to each other.
Nice.
Okay. In the early days of the web, Flash served an essential role, offering graphical and interactive capabilities that simply had no equivalent in plain HTML and JavaScript. Since then, a raft of technologies, Canvas for 2D graphics, WebGL for 3D graphics, HTML5's video and audio tags, JavaScript interfaces for microphones and webcams, among many others, have piece by piece eliminated the need for Flash, with most recently support for DRM-protected video being incorporated into HTML5. The need for Flash is largely and finally eliminated. As such, Adobe, together with Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Mozilla, and every right-thinking human being everywhere, has planned to end-of-life the browser plugin. The plugin will be fully supported and maintained until the end of 2020, with browsers such as Chrome and Edge continuing to embed and patch the plugin. Adobe says that in certain unspecified geographies, it will move to end the support and use of the plugin more aggressively due to widespread use of outdated versions of the software. The writing's been on the wall for Flash for some time, but in the end, in ending support and development, Adobe is creating certain gaps that haven't really yet been filled. That's true. Flash has a wealth of development tools, but first and third party that had focused on developing rich interactive web content. HTML tooling, by contrast, is typically built around producing websites. Adobe has been working to bring some of its Flash tooling into the HTML5 world. The Flash professional timeline-based development environment, for example, has been extended to support Canvas and WebGL animations, moving away from being strictly a Flash tool, a change that also saw it renamed to Animate CC in 2016. But other tools, such as the more code-oriented Flash Builder and a wide range of third-party tools, appear to be left behind. Perhaps more significantly, Adobe doesn't appear to be offering a long-term way to access the substantial legacy of Flash content. While many uses of Flash were low value, advertising, splash screens, and other such annoyances, there are a vast number of games and other interactive content that will be inaccessible after the end of 2020. And as of right now, that includes every single game my wife plays on Flash on Facebook. It is a significant cultural artifact spanning about 20 years of the web's earliest days. It's possible that Adobe will do something to fill the gap. For example, it could develop a full fidelity Flash player built using Canvas, WebGL, JavaScript, and so on. But if it doesn't, these things will be lost in the mists of time, making humanity poorer but more secure as a result. So will you miss Flash when it's gone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free. 1-800-790-0415.
It's about time.
It's about time, but yeah, we got to wait 3 more years. And it's, you know, like everything else, it still won't die. There'll be someone still running an old version.
Right.
And the bad guys will still put out fake updates because we're so used to updating
it. Well, and this is the problem with Flash. It is very unsecured. Every time you turn around, there's a new hole in it that Adobe is very slow to patch. And the bad guys are very fast to take advantage of.
And And because of that, people don't believe the real Adobe update notices either, because they know about the fake. The ones that do know about the fake ones.
Right, don't update when it's real.
Yeah.
And I get it, and I really do understand that Adobe has made themselves fairly ubiquitous on the internet, and that lots and lots of people are dependent on them for a lot of things like games and et cetera, et cetera. Google, YouTube stopped using Flash for its videos a very long time ago.
I'd say quite a while ago.
But there are still millions, and I do mean millions, of videos on YouTube that are Flash-based. Very few of them people watch anymore, and it's certainly the very old stuff, but it's still there.
And there's still gaming websites.
Pogo.
Pogo Games is mostly Flash.
Yep.
Although they are switching a lot of them to HTML, but they're still mostly Flash.
Yep. And so,
and many of the browsers now, they've stopped reporting. So even if you have Flash installed, your browser won't tell the other end it does.
Right.
So it will switch to HTML instead. So then the other end says, oh, you don't have Flash, you better install it. So you think, I thought I did, and install it again.
Right.
It still doesn't work because your browser won't say it has Flash. You have to go into your browser security settings and tell it to let Flash run. Because it's been moved into the security settings because Flash is a security failure.
Right.
What's the word I want? Potential security breach.
Yes. Vulnerability.
It's vulnerability. It's vulnerable.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is our pal Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga? You're not going to say the Tawaga, are you? Okay.
I thought you were going to chime in. Joe from Cheektowaga.
Okay.
What's up, Joe?
I wanted to see if you would complete it this time.
I'm the kind of guy who can say...
I have to wonder what the National Weather Service is going to do because their radar loops still use Flash.
Yep. Yep.
And if Flash were to disappear tomorrow or like if Firefox would refuse to run it, like it refuses to run the Java or even the Ice-T plugin...
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what I do, because about a week ago, the National Weather Service radar was out of commission, and I was at a loss as to find to someone that had accurate radar data loops, or accurate radar that would play in a loop. I mean, I could get a few shots that were okay, but... Something that was playing in a loop? I don't know.
Right.
Many of the websites that used to use Flash will and have had to switch over to HTML5 or something else for their tablet and phone versions. And so we're seeing most of those types of websites have already switched. But yeah, there's still this inertia.
Ooh, that's a good point. I used to visit that on my Nexus 7. I think what they do is they compose an animated GIF for that.
And thank you for saying GIF, by the way.
Yes, I used to tell people, GIF is peanut butter. But when I heard somebody describe, hey, the inventor of the format itself called it a GIF and not a GIF. I said, okay.
That was mean. You know why he did that?
Sorry?
You know why he called it a GIF and not a GIF?
Because not sure.
Because choosy developers choose GIF. Exactly.
And the G stands for graphics, which is a hard G anyway.
It doesn't matter. The point is, you respect the pun.
Yes.
There are few of them in the computer world, so when you get one, respect the pun.
Yep.
Actually, I'd like to also refer to one of your previous callers, the unfortunate person that had the instructions on her iPad to install software and maybe ruined her iPad.
Right.
You mentioned something about these scams that will say, oh, don't close your browser or I'm going to, destroy all your data.
Right.
Okay. This brings up a really important point. I wonder what sort of robot they're going to dispatch that will come over and plug in my backup disk.
Exactly. I got one of those calls one day, and just for the heck of it, I led the guy on. He said, if you don't pay us the money, we'll destroy your hard drive. I said, go ahead. Every couple of months, I wipe it out and reinstall all my data anyway.
Not bad.
He went, what? I said, yeah, it's not like I'm not afraid to reinstall my data. That's why I have multiple backups.
Yep.
Well, we can get at your backups. Don't think so. My backup's sitting in a safe.
Yeah.
It's that little hand that's going to come out of the screen and smack you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It even pays to make a backup before you do updates. I tend to do that in case one of the backups goes awry. About the only thing that I did an update and it really screwed my computer.
Yeah.
I updated Grub. And all of a sudden, it would do is scroll up screen an exclamation mark or something like that.
Yeah, that Grub is the bootloader. It's the thing that actually starts up your computer in Linux, and you screw up a Grub update, and you got problems. All right, listen, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe. Have fun. That's it. That music tells me we're done for another week. I want to thank all of you who called in. I want to apologize to those who we did not get, to whom we did not get. You got to call earlier next week. I'm sorry. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, Sound Bites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.